The swimmers will take up positions in the water away from the raft itself to act as a safety backup. One of the swimmers will also be in the other raft. The swimmers also must change their scuba gear now. As an added precaution, they wear full scuba outfits, including wetsuits, and they also are on scuba tanks. It's during this current period that they change these tanks to give them a fresh supply. Should they be caught changing their tanks and breathing free air when the astronauts open the hatch, the doctors have warned that they too face the danger of decontamination, rather the danger of contamination, and would be put into isolation along with the astronauts. There actually are two mobile quarantine facilities aboard the carrier, one for the Apollo 12 crew themselves, the other a backup facility, now slated to be used for Apollo 13. But should any group of swimmers become contaminated, the backup model would be used for them. The 18-foot motorized whale boat of the Hornet is now moving ahead of the ship toward the splashdown area. Hovering about 40 feet upwind from the command module, recovery helicopter number one off to the side is now photo helicopter containing all the official photographers who will record this mission. Raft number two is moving toward the command module, but it seems to be moving very slowly. Lieutenant Bill Strawn, does it look to you through the glasses there as though the swimmers in raft number two are having a little more difficulty getting to the module?
No, I don't think they're having any difficulty at this time, Bill.
Can you see how many are in the raft with Lieutenant Janke?
Two are in the raft.
There are two other swimmers with Lieutenant Janke in the raft. The number two raft now has almost arrived at the side of the command module. As soon as it gets there, Lieutenant Janke will step aboard. We can see just one swimmer at the command module at the present time. We might mention that there are plenty of other backup measures standing by here aboard the Hornet. We have extra helicopters and extra planes already in position for launch should something go wrong with any of the aircraft involved. The second raft is now just a few feet from the command module, and now is there. The swimmers and the decon swimmer are getting aboard the flotation collar. Lieutenant Janke just picked up the package of flight suits and other respirators to give to the astronauts. We're trying to see just how soon the hatch opens. At this point, the spacecraft still is disappearing into the swells for seconds at a time, and it is not too clear just exactly where the hatch is in relation to the lieutenant and in relation to our vantage point. Photo helicopter now reports all swimmers are at the command module. All swimmers are at the command module and in good condition. It appears that they still are transferring gear now from one raft to another, and that the decon swimmer is approaching the hatch to make the first Earth contact with the Apollo 12 astronauts from anyone here aboard the carrier Hornet. The whale boat is moving off the port bow of the Hornet at this moment, and I think the progress of the whaleboat is a good indication of the height of the seas, and we can see why there was some hesitation about launching it, because the bow of the whaleboat is consistently breaking under the water of the waves. Naturally, each of the men aboard has a life jacket on. The whaleboat was involved earlier in the training in a serious accident which injured one man when it was being launched during fairly high seas and suddenly tipped over. A total of five men were spilled into the water. That day, the helicopters had an extra chore of retrieving that crew. It's impossible to see from this vantage point just exactly at what point in the proceedings we are now. It appears that the swimmers still are transferring equipment from one raft to another. I can't tell whether Lieutenant Jenke has opened the hatch or not yet. However, these other swimmers are now jumping into the water to take up positions as safety swimmers. They will be about 8 or 10 or 15 feet away from the raft the astronauts will step into to await the recovery helicopter's lowering of the Billy Pugh net, in which they will ride back up to the aircraft.
You've been listening to correspondent Bill Lindsay reporting from the USS Hornet on the landing and recovery of Apollo 12. This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the landing and recovery of the spacecraft. Apollo 12 landed at 20 hours, 58 and 30 seconds GMT, about 37 minutes ago, safely into the mid-Pacific Ocean, southeast of the Samoa Islands. We're standing by. We have been waiting for the astronauts to leave the spacecraft. The necessary routine is being carried out. The decontamination solutions put on the spacecraft, the various suits, face mask that will have to be worn by the astronauts will be passed to them by the swimmers. The seas are fairly rough. We have 3-foot waves with 7-foot swells, or about 2-meter swells. We can see the white caps as we watch. And we are standing by, of course, for the astronauts to come out. In the meantime, let's listen to a brief summary of late world news.
The Apollo 12 mission has ended. The three astronauts in their command spaceship splashed down a little more than 35 minutes ago in the Pacific, about 4 kilometers from the recovery ship Hornet. Man's second venture to the moon ends a nearly total success. Operations to recover Yankee Clipper, the command ship, from the ocean are now in progress. President Nixon signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty for the United States Monday, the same day on which the Presidium of the Soviet Parliament also ratified it. Mr. Nixon called the pact a major international agreement designed to make the world safer for all mankind. He said the United States will continue to pursue the cause of peace in every possible way. The White House said the United States has been, and still is, willing to negotiate privately with North Vietnam to end the Vietnam War. The spokesman's comment came in connection with charges by the North Vietnamese delegation in Paris that the United States refused to engage in private negotiations. The spokesman said the only question that will not be discussed is the right of the South Vietnamese people to determine their own form of government. Egyptian planes attacked Israeli positions on the occupied east bank of the Suez Canal. Egyptian sources said the plane struck Israeli missile sites and supply dumps. Israel said it suffered no casualties or damage in the raid. Thousands of farmers demonstrated throughout France to press their demands for increased government subsidies and easier credit terms. Atomic energy workers also struck for 24 hours, protesting personnel cuts. And in Milan, Italy, thousands of persons had to walk to work because of another wildcat strike of public transportation workers. The United States Army said that Lieutenant William Colley, Jr. will be tried in a military court on charges of murdering more than 100 Vietnamese civilians during a combat operation last year. The Army also announced that Lieutenant General William Pierce will head an inquiry to determine whether an earlier Army unit investigation of the incident was adequate. That inquiry found no reason for disciplinary action. South Vietnam's defense ministry has said it found no truth to press reports that American troops killed several hundred residents of a hamlet in Quang Nai province. A rock from the moon went on display in Paris at the Palace of Discovery, France's largest science museum. At the same time, another moon rock was drawing large crowds in Moscow, where thousands lined up to see the rock at an American exhibit. They also saw a color film of the Apollo 11 expedition to the moon last July. That's the news in brief. Leo Scully reporting on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the flight of Apollo 12. Apollo 12 has landed safely in the mid-Pacific Ocean, about 5.6 kilometers from the aircraft carrier USS Hornet, landing at 20 hours 58 GMT. Norm Guerin?
The astronauts are now putting on fresh flight suits and respirators in preparation for their helicopter trip back to the USS Hornet. There is a report that the hatch has just been opened. Now back to Bill Lindsay, pool reporter aboard the USS Hornet, who is describing the recovery of the Apollo 12 spacecraft and astronauts.
Are entering ramp number one, which is now almost on the far side and out of our range of vision. One astronaut is in the raft. Lieutenant Jenke leans back into the hatch. Photo helicopter observing says all operations normal at this time. We're told that Conrad was the first one out. The second one is now out. And the third one is coming out. All three astronauts are now out and in the raft.
That's correct, Bill.
We're told from the photo observer they came out in that order, Conrad, Gordon, and Bean. Conrad, Gordon, and Bean, of course, at this range, we can't see. This information obviously comes from the photo narrator. Now Lieutenant Jenke is preparing to close the hatch. It's about 23 by 28 inches, and as I said, weighs more than 200 pounds, and for one man to handle it is a chore. The lieutenant does get the hatch closed and now is locking it as recovery helicopter begins to move into position. Earlier today, I mentioned that recovery helicopter 66 has been used on three previous Apollo recovery missions, and it has gained quite a reputation in the Navy, and particularly here aboard the carrier Hornet. This helicopter has picked up a dozen men who have made moon missions. Today brings that total to 15. Apparently there is a little difficulty with the hatch getting it closed. Lieutenant Bill Strawn, did you hear anything on that?
It appeared that he had it closed at one time or almost closed. He opened it back up and then he closed it again. Apparently he's still having a little problem fastening the hatch shut.
This trouble with the hatch is actually something that never... The trouble with the hatch never comes up during the practices because that boilerplate, that dummy spacecraft with which they work, has no hatch, isn't that right?
That's correct, Bill.
Thanks, Lieutenant Strawn. Word now comes from photo helicopter that the hatch is closed and secured. The hatch is closed and secured. And now we wait for the signal that the astronauts are ready to come aboard. Hovering almost directly off the port beam of the Hornet, which has come just about dead in the water now, is the photo helicopter. And just behind that, about 40 feet to the south, is number 66, beginning to make its run. I assume that from the far side of the model, where we can't see, that signal has been given for the first pickup, because recovery is now beginning to move in. Photo reports the astronauts look in good condition in the raft. And if anything, the raft is not bobbing nearly as badly now as it was when the flotation collar was established. And I'm not sure whether Lieutenant Bill Strawn, the ship's position now upwind, has that much effect in calming the seas around the module.
No, it doesn't have much effect at all.
But the sea certainly has moderated.
Yes, it has.
Recovery helicopter has begun its run to pick up the first astronaut. As yet, we don't see the net going down. Safety swimmers are in position in the water just about 10 feet off the raft. There goes the billy pew net starting down. As number 66 moves in directly over the command module, 66 is moving just a little bit beyond it from our vantage point, just a bit beyond the raft where the astronauts await. This could be because the wind will blow that net, and it has been difficult in some occasions to get get the net stable enough to be grabbed quickly. The net is now hanging just over the raft. It is in the raft. At this particular point, the crew chief aboard helicopter 66 is reporting to his pilot. The raft is in the net. His next word is, the astronaut is in the net, and he is on his way up. We do not know yet which astronaut was first into the net. He is now up about 20 feet above the water as the helicopter, as we told you, made an abrupt 10-foot increase in elevation, then stopped, and now is reeling in the net at a rate of about 1 foot per second. That means it takes about 40 seconds for the astronaut to arrive in the helicopter. The helicopter will make three separate passes to pick up the astronaut. It does not attempt to remain in the hover position. One reason for that is because of the rotor blast. For the swimmers and the astronauts directly below, it becomes somewhat of a chore. The first astronaut is now at the hatch of the helicopter and is inside. We have not yet received any word. No word from the helicopter, photo helicopter. The recovery net now again is being lowered out of recovery. We just got word the first astronaut into the helicopter was Commander Richard Gordon. The report from the helicopter is the condition of Commander Gordon is good. Dr. Clarence Jernigan, a NASA physician, is aboard that helicopter and he is conducting initial physical examinations. Recovery helicopter has now moved around to approach again to life raft attached to the command module from the downwind side. It appears to be very stable. The winds, which were last clocked at about 20 miles an hour, apparently are not having any effect at all. In fact, the helicopter pilots tell us that some wind actually is better than none at all to allow them to hover in a more stable manner. Number 66 again is over the command module, just a little bit upwind now, lowering the Billy Pugh net once more. It's about halfway down to the ground, or to the water. Photo helicopter observing all this from on the spot says the operation continues normal. These helicopters are equipped with special radar, which allows them to determine their height above the water with great accuracy. The radar goes down against the water and can give them a reading that is accurate within just feet. The second astronaut is now on the way up in the net. The second astronaut is on the way up. He has very little oscillation this time. He's about halfway up to the helicopter, and there is little sway this time. He is about 10 feet below the helicopter hatch. We have no word yet on who the second astronaut is. He is at the hatch, and there is the crew man from the helicopter and Dr. Jernigan pulling him in. The second astronaut is out of the net. The net is clear and again starting back down. Lieutenant Bill Strawn, they've changed procedures a little bit on us here. It looks as though... Well, I'm sorry. I guess 66 did pull away there. It looked like he was going to stay.
Yes, he did pull away.
Why does he make a separate run for each one instead of staying there?
If he stayed over the raft, the rotor wash creates so much, such a bad sea state, it would get the astronauts wet and it blows the module around somewhat. And it's better to move clear away and get the rotor wash away.
Thanks, Lieutenant Strawn. When word is that the second astronaut into the helicopter is Alan Bean. First was Commander Dick Gordon and second Commander Alan Bean. And now the Billy Pugh net is down for the recovery of the third and final astronaut, Pete Conrad. It appears that we have not yet had, well, it's obvious that we have not yet had the Billy Pugh net down. 66 is making its final approach right now. The raft, the net, is about halfway between the helicopter and the water as it approaches. If anything, the skies have cleared somewhat here in the Pacific. There is blue directly overhead, although there are clouds around on the horizon. And now all eyes are to the port bow aboard the carrier Hornet. The carrier has swung around a little bit to bring it almost directly opposite the bridge. Number 66 recovery helicopter again is moving directly over the command module with the raft about halfway down. Now it goes lower, and as the helicopter moves upwind, it continues to drop. With this recovery, the last of the Apollo 12 astronauts will be aboard the carrier Hornet very, very shortly. The helicopter is now hovering a little bit upwind, and the net remains in just about that same position. It has not been dropped all the way down yet, and we can see several figures standing in the doorway. The helicopter hovers back now, actually moving backwards to become more directly overhead from the life raft. And the net begins to go down lower. It is swaying a little bit this time. It has a rope attached to it the swimmers grab for, and they get it. The raft is in the net. The swimmer is in the raft, or the net, and up it goes. Very fast for about 10 feet, and this time it's swinging a little bit. This is Pete Conrad now on his way up to number 66. And by my watch, that completes the recovery in less than 55 minutes. Less than 55 minutes from splashdown to the last astronaut aboard helicopter number 66. At this moment, in the recovery helicopter, Dr. Jernigan of NASA is quizzing the astronauts about how they feel and giving them a quick inspection. And the recovery helicopter, along with the photo helicopter and one swim helicopter as an escort, will very shortly make a large arc away from the carrier Hornet and then approach from astern. The flight is not just to give the astronauts a ride or to delay anything. It is required as part of the decontamination procedures. After examining the astronauts and talking with them, Dr. Jernigan must report by radio to the quarantine control officer here aboard the carrier. And the helicopter bringing the astronauts back from the moon is not permitted to come aboard until the quarantine control officer gives his permission. One of the points of discussion during this voyage has been what reactions would be taken if one of the astronauts did prove to be sick. And there has been no real answer to that one, except that, of course, the astronauts would come aboard. And the only suggestion was that it might be possible to make the crew, the ship's sick bay, part of the quarantine area. The helicopters have now begun that arc I described to you, and so it will be probably in just about 2 or 3 minutes, possibly 4, before the Apollo 12 crew is back aboard the carrier Hornet. The decontamination procedures are being taken very seriously by all the NASA people here and by I interrupt because NASA just has a late report from recovery helicopter. The doctor reports the astronauts all are in what he termed outstanding condition. The astronauts are in outstanding condition. Returning to the matter of quarantine, both Navy and NASA consider this subject very seriously. The precautions extend to the crew flying the recovery helicopter. The two enlisted crewmen who must be in the cargo hatch to operate the winch and the net wear the biological isolation garments. However, they don't wear the headpiece. Instead, they wear a respirator similar to the one worn by the decon swimmer. The pilot and co-pilot who remain in the forward compartment of the helicopter wear their special oxygen masks. The two crewmen in the rear of the helicopter are also instructed not to come in contact with the astronauts, but to remain well clear of the hatch when they come aboard. Interestingly enough, I noticed when the second astronaut came aboard, when Dean went aboard the helicopter, I could see two persons helping him in the hatchway. One of them was to have been Dr. Jernigan, who will now accompany the astronauts into the mobile quarantine facility and remain with them on the trip to Houston. The second one, I don't know. But the NASA people had warned that if anybody comes in contact with the astronauts, they too face the prospect of the extended quarantine period. The word has word has just come over the ship's command channel to prepare to receive helicopters, and that will be the three that we see now heading back toward our stern. Word also from the ship's officers that the Combat Information Center aboard the ship initially picked up the command module when it was 300 miles away and kept it on track as it rapidly closed on the ship. It came in at an altitude of about 130,000 feet. We reported that the initial voice contact with the astronauts, we are 4-0, and that was, which means that they are excellent. The first word from the astronauts said, we are 4-0, meaning we are excellent. And we have no word yet when that first voice contact was established, nor with whom it was made. It could have been the recovery helicopters who were tuned in to listen. It could have been Airbus, who was also on that. And it could have been one of the special radio relay planes which have been circling overhead well above the clouds, relaying all radio transmissions back and forth between the astronauts, the Space Center at Houston, and also the NASA and Navy crews here aboard the carrier. The flight deck of the carrier Hornet is beginning to fill up once again in the area around Spot 5, which we think will be where Recovery Ship 66 will come aboard. The band has taken up its position on the flight deck, and security forces are out to keep Spot 5 clear. Now the three helicopters, I believe it's Swim 1, it definitely is Photo and Recovery 1, now approaching off the stern, and will be here shortly. And there must be about 1,000 cameras now visible on the flight deck aboard the carrier Hornet. While the helicopters approach, there are three swimmers still sitting patiently on the collar in the command module, about 1,000 yards aport. They will remain there until the astronauts are safely on board ship, and then the Hornet will turn its attention to the recovery of the command module itself. Number 66 is coming along the port side to make a swing-in landing. The photo helicopter will approach directly astern and land back there. Number 66 coming in very carefully. It's now about 30 feet above the flight deck and off the port. He will swing sideways in as he is doing right now and approaching the flight deck. No one is visible through the window in the cargo hatch. I assume everybody is sitting down. Number 5 landing spot will be not quite directly below us. The helicopter now directly over the flight deck and settling slowly. 20 feet. Commander Warrenott bringing it down very carefully. Down to about 10 feet now. Helicopter's wheels are almost touching, and it is hovering just momentarily. And the astronauts are back aboard the carrier Hornet. The flight director already has given the command to shut off the engines. The deck crews are out to put the chocks and the chains in place. The astronauts will not leave helicopter 66 on the deck here. The entire aircraft will be towed to the large elevator number 2, which is just in front of the present position of the command module. Then the entire helicopter will be lowered to the hangar deck. It will be towed back adjacent to the entrance to the mobile quarantine facility. The door will be opened. The astronauts will walk down the steps and walk perhaps 20 feet to the quarantine facility, and that's the last that anyone will see of them until they come out of quarantine in Houston. And now a crewman from the carrier goes out and affixes a sign to the helicopter 66, which says, three more like before. Three more like before, the motto of the Hornet for the recovery missions of Apollo 12. Incidentally, as I mentioned, that number 66 has previously picked up three sets of astronauts. A spacecraft symbol is painted on the fuselage of the helicopters for each of those successful missions, 8, 10, and 11. Before today's mission, Helicopter Squadron 4 was so confident they added a fourth spacecraft and numbered it 12, then covered it over with paper and tape. And after the last astronaut was safely inside the helicopter this morning, Commander Ott reached outside, grabbed a rope attached to that paper, and pulled it loose. So when the helicopter came back aboard just now, four spacecraft emblems were very visible on its side. The deck crews have attached the tow bar to the wheels of the helicopter, And now the mule, the little electric truck, backs into position. The helicopter blade, the rotor blade, must also be folded, and this requires a little bit of time and causes one delay. However, it is now just 1 minute and 2 seconds, 1 hour and 2 minutes, I should say, since Apollo 12 touched down. The helicopter crew, in going all out, preparing for today's recovery, by the way, painted on the bottom of number 66, "Welcome Home Yankees" in red, white, and blue. And as the astronauts looked up from the net as they rose toward the helicopter, they saw their first greeting, "Welcome Home Yankees." And now the music begins. The Navy band, brought aboard specially for today's recovery, begins to play on the flight deck. The rotor blades now are folded back, and the helicopter is being moved onto elevator number 2 on the port side aboard the carrier Hornet. In just a very few minutes, it will be down in the hangar deck, and in seconds after that, the astronauts will be back inside, or rather, will be inside the mobile quarantine facility. Crews are swinging the helicopter now into position aboard the elevator. It will also be chained and chocked down there to prevent any slip on the way down. There are plenty of photographers in evidence here, and now NASA officials are appearing on the helicopter. They're going to ride down with it. We see John Stonecipher, the landing recovery team leader. We see Jerry Hammock, who is from the Manned Space Center in Houston, arrived last night to be present. We are looking for Dr. George Miller, also present, the NASA Associate Administrator. And now the elevator number 2 is disappearing from the flight deck, going below to the hangar deck. The chief naval official present today is Admiral John McCain, the commander of all U.S. forces in the Pacific, who arrived last night, along with Rear Admiral Donald Davis, the head of the Hawaii Sea Frontier, and also the commander of Task Force 130, which is the Pacific Recovery Force. Number 66 is now on the flight deck, or rather on the hangar deck, and moving inside. Space on the hangar deck is quite limited, so in addition to being towed by truck, the helicopter is also ready to be pushed by hand in order to get it into position with the hatched side alongside the mobile quarantine facility. The helicopter must go backwards. At this point, the truck turns it around and begins to push while crews guide it by hand. Once the astronauts are deposited inside the mobile quarantine facility, more of the decontamination requirements go into effect. First of all, at just about this point in time, all but one of the helicopter crewmen are getting out. Just one enlisted man remains inside the aircraft to actually act as a brakeman. The other three are taken outside at this point so they can avoid any possible contamination. As soon as the astronauts step outside the helicopter, the door is slammed shut. It is immediately brought back up to the flight deck, and a fumigation procedure begins. The astronauts leave some of the things they brought aboard, and the crew leaves its uniforms and equipment inside as the aircraft is thoroughly fumigated again to prevent contamination. And as soon as the astronauts get inside the mobile quarantine facility, the area where they have walked is also sprayed with betadine. NASA officials are following the requirements laid down by an interagency committee on back contamination, composed of experts from various governmental agencies who laid out the requirements for the prevention of any possible contamination. Dr. Miller, the Associate Administrator of NASA, said he feels these same restrictions will be in effect at least through Apollo 13 and 14, when astronaut crews are scheduled to take deep samples from the moon, going well below the surface. And Dr. Miller also said that NASA is not particularly concerned by the fact that the decontamination requirements sometimes are bulky and time-consuming, because he pointed out they all occur after the mission is over and they do not interfere in any way with the work of the NASA crews. Helicopter number 66 is now being pushed and towed back along the hangar deck. It is now alongside a large plastic tunnel to which the space capsule will be attached when it is brought aboard in a few minutes from now. The helicopter now is alongside the set of steps especially built for this mission, and the astronauts will make their first appearance in just a few minutes. The helicopter now is in position, and it is two NASA officials who are shoving the stairs into position. One is John Stonecipher. The other one I do not recognize. I believe it's Don Peterson. And there are the astronauts in the doorway. Astronauts Conrad, Gordon, and Bean waving briefly to the sailors standing around. It's hard to see which is which because they do have the special respirators on, as well as Hornet caps, which were waiting aboard the helicopter. All three disappear after another wave inside the mobile quarantine facility, followed by Dr. Clarence Jernigan. Randy Stone, a NASA engineer, slams the door. And in just those few brief seconds, we had a quick glimpse of three men who certainly appear to be in very good health. It's impossible to tell whether they were smiling behind those rubber masks, but they certainly moved with ease and showed no ill effects of their long ride. And so America's second mission to land men on the moon and bring them back safely has ended, an almost total and flawless success. Astronauts Pete Conrad, Richard Gordon, and Alan Bean now are back aboard the carrier Hornet. Due aboard shortly are more moon samples, part of the Surveyor 3 spacecraft that sat on the moon for more than 2 years, and particularly its TV camera. I would like to thank Navy Lieutenant Bill Strawn for his advice and help. I would like to thank Dick Mittauer and Larry King and Jim Henry, all of NASA, for their help during this voyage. This is Bill Lindsay, and this has been the recovery of Apollo 12. Bill Lindsay reporting from the USS Hornet in the Pacific Ocean.
And this is the Voice of America, broadcasting throughout the world with live coverage of the landing and recovery of Apollo 12. All three astronauts, Pete Conrad, Richard Gordon, and Alan Bean, now safely aboard the USS Hornet, already inside their mobile quarantine facility. Splash came at 20 hours 58 Greenwich Mean Time, about 3.1 miles away from the USS Hornet. Now, from the Voice of America newsroom, a brief summary of late world news.
The Apollo 12 spacecraft has returned to Earth right on time, splashing into the Pacific near American Samoa. Thousands of people were able to see the landing as direct television pictures of the spacecraft coming down to the sea were flashed ashore. Astronauts Charles Conrad, Richard Gordon, and Alan Bean said they felt fine during the landing sequence and there were no problems. The recovery ship, the U.S. aircraft carrier Hornet, was less than 3 nautical miles away, and recovery helicopters hovered nearby as the Apollo settled gently into the sea, suspended on its 3 main landing parachutes. President Nixon has signed the treaty barring the spread of nuclear weapons, while in Moscow, the Soviet Parliament's Presidium ratified the pact. President Nixon, in signing the instrument of ratification, said the United States is thus completing the process of ratifying a major international agreement designed to make the world a safer home for all mankind. The White House said today the United States has been and is still willing to negotiate privately with North Vietnam to end the Vietnam War. A spokesman said the only question that will not be discussed is the right of the South Vietnamese people to determine their own form of government for themselves. The comment came in connection with charges by the North Vietnamese delegate to the Paris talks that the United States has refused to engage in private negotiations. The U.S. Army said that Lieutenant William Colley Jr. will be tried in a military court on charges of murdering more than 100 Vietnamese civilians during a combat operation last year. The Army also announced that Lieutenant General William Pierce will head an inquiry to determine whether an earlier Army unit investigation of the incident was adequate. That inquiry found no reason for disciplinary action. South Vietnam's Defense Ministry has said it found no truth to press reports that American troops killed several hundred residents of a hamlet in Quang Nai Province. Egyptian planes crossed the Suez Canal to attack Israeli positions on the occupied east bank of the waterway. An Egyptian spokesman said the planes struck Israeli missile sites and supply dumps near Kantara. An Israeli spokesman said Israeli military forces suffered no casualties or damage, but that one civilian working in a quarry was slightly injured. America's overseas aid director has urged the U.S. Senate to restore cuts made in the program by the House of Representatives. The official, John Hanna, called the House cut of $466 million serious, especially since President Nixon's request was as low as possible to begin with. The aid director, among other things, asked the Senate to restore cuts in funds for technical assistance to Asian, African, and Latin American nations. A rock from the surface of the moon went on display in Paris Monday, just as the Apollo 12 headed for a splashdown in the Pacific. Meanwhile, another of the rocks brought back from the moon by the Apollo 11 crew is drawing large crowds in Moscow. Thousands of people lined up in freezing weather to see the rock and to watch a color film showing the Apollo 11 expedition to the moon. That's the news from the Voice of America. This is John Cooley reporting.
And this is the Voice of America broadcasting continuing coverage of the flight of Apollo 12, a flight that ended at 20 hours 58 Greenwich Mean Time, about a minute and 13, or rather 1 hour and 13 minutes ago. In the mid-Pacific Ocean, a perfect landing about 3.1 miles or 5.6 kilometers from the USS Hornet, the recovery vessel. The three astronauts, Alan Bean, Pete Conrad, Richard Gordon, are all in good condition, according to the recovery physician. They're aboard the mobile quarantine facility. This is the trailer-like vehicle that they will use for the next 3 days. It's aboard the ship. It is sealed for precautions to avoid any contamination from the moon. That MQF, the mobile quarantine facility, will be taken from the ship, placed aboard an aircraft, and flown back to Houston. From there, placed aboard a truck and brought to the Manned Spacecraft Center at Houston, where, once again, it will be hooked up to the lunar receiving laboratory, the more permanent area for the astronauts, where they will stay in quarantine, I believe, until about December 12th. Well, I'd like to ask my two colleagues who've been with us here at our Apollo News Center, Bill Land and John Hammersmith, for any comments they may have after watching this landing in the mid-Pacific, a rather choppy mid-Pacific, but yet almost a pinpoint landing, wasn't it, Bill?
It appeared to be. I don't think we have an accurate analysis yet of just where they landed, but certainly it was very close to the prime recovery ship. 3.1 miles is what they calculated. Just how close they came to the aim point, we don't know yet, but obviously it was quite close. I was impressed by the size of the seas, and I was also impressed by the comments of the helicopter crew afterward that some of our listeners may not have heard, but they said that in spite of the high seas, they thought the command module rode extremely well, and the crew was certainly in great shape when they came aboard the helicopter.
Well, John Hammersmith, the fact that the spacecraft landed upside down, did that pose any particular problem?
Well, actually, Bill, it didn't land upside down, but it promptly turned over as soon as it hit the water. No, as a matter of fact, I think there have only been one of the manned Apollo shots that remained upright.
And by deploying these balloon-like flotation...
They look like water wings.
Water wings.
They serve just about the same purpose, Bill. The idea is to... they're inflated, and the idea is to turn the spacecraft right side up.
Well, let's call in our colleague, Rhett Turner, at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. What's the reaction in mission control, Rhett?
Well, all of the mission control engineers lit up the traditional cigars just as soon as the helicopter touched down on the deck. They don't wait for the astronauts to step out. Once that helicopter touches down, then you assume that the aircraft carrier is safe and that the mission has been completed. And that's when the mission clock stops, too, incidentally. It stops at splash, but then there is one particular counter that continues on until touchdown on the carrier deck. And according to our calculations this time, it was 59 minutes and 30 seconds from splash until the astronauts were on the deck. And the splash time was just 14 seconds beyond the predicted. In other words, the large parachutes took just 14 seconds longer to descend from 3,000 meters above the surface than expected. The splash time coming 244 hours, 36 minutes, 24 seconds after liftoff from the Earth on November 14th. In mission control, they are quite jubilant still. Everybody's shaking hands, and actually it's beginning to empty now.
Well, Brett Turner, we'll ask you to stay on with us as we more or less run down this 10-day mission that has just concluded about 10 days, 4 hours, and 36 minutes after liftoff. Could we begin, Bill Land, with the liftoff? The launch, I suppose, was the only thing that was not according to the rule book. We did have that problem of lightning, and what is the best estimate now, or the best guess at this point, of NASA on how that lightning came about that apparently hit the spacecraft?
Well, I haven't talked to the people who have analyzed this in the last couple of days, but the word we had at that time, the analysis was that, yes, there was a large discharge of electricity that occurred, I believe it was around 3,000 or 4,000 feet. It was some 40 seconds after liftoff, at any rate. And to the best of our knowledge now, it was not a lightning strike per se, but it was a discharge of electricity, just as lightning does occur, but it was a discharge of electricity that occurred through the spacecraft as it was moving through the atmosphere and down through the plume to the ground. The plume of the engine, that is, of the large Saturn I or the Saturn V launch vehicle, the S1C stage, that plume does contain sufficient carbon-type material to cause the electricity to flow through it. So it appears that if the spacecraft had not been there, we probably wouldn't have had any lightning. However, we did get this discharge because it was there acting as a large grounding rod. However, as we all know, it caused only a momentary problem, and we've seen no permanent results from that except for a few sensors that did stop operating. But, of course, they were unnecessary to the completion of the mission.
Well, John Hammersmith, with this mission going so nearly perfectly, wouldn't you say that this has carried us on a great step toward our exploration of the moon? Actually, the Apollo 11, our first landing on the moon, was just that, and we did begin some exploration, but this flight of Apollo, this mission of Apollo 12, was really to begin the exploration of the moon.
Yes, Bill, we had the confidence this time that the men could move around, that above all, of course, that we could land safely, and that the men could move around. We were able to pick a site that was scientifically a little more interesting than the site for Apollo 11. And judging from the comments that have been coming back from the crew and the discussions going up from the ground in a total of, I think, nearly 8 hours of activity on the surface of the moon, the scientific yield should be considerably greater than it was for Apollo 11.
Well, Bill Land, one of the major goals of this flight was the pinpoint landing, and certainly they hit that right on the nail, very close to the Surveyor 3 spacecraft. Oh, in fact, I think they had to almost avoid it, didn't they, when they sat down? What does this do for future flights? I'm thinking in particularly of Apollo 13, on which you worked, the plans that you worked on there.
Well, this flight did, in fact, demonstrate the capability for a point landing on the moon, and this was one of the objectives of the flight. We stressed beforehand that we wouldn't have to actually land close to the Surveyor to prove this capability, but as it turned out, we proved it in the most demonstrative way by landing exactly where Pete Conrad wanted to put it, and so close to Surveyor that it was actually surprising to many of us. The surprising part was not that he just got in close, but the fact that the navigation was so precise that he had to make very, very few corrections coming in to make that landing point. He saw all the landmarks just as he was supposed to see them, and things went beautifully all the way into the pinpoint landing.
You're right. This does give us now a capability that's very important for future missions, and certainly important on Apollo 13 if we do, in fact, go to the Fra Mora site, which is a rather rugged site, and one in which there's a small area in which to land, and consequently we'll have to have this kind of capability to perform a landing at Fra Mora. That decision to go to Fra Mora, by the way, has not been sealed yet. It's been made tentatively, and it depends still on some photographic information that's coming back from this flight. We should have that answer in a few days.
Well, Rhett Turner in Houston, what about that scientific package that they left on the surface of the moon? It was a very sophisticated one. Some people have called it a nuclear operating observatory. How is that coming about? How is that operating, I should ask?
The ALSEP, A-L-S-E-P, package, as it's called, is operating well. There's one problem with one of the instruments, the suprathermal ion detector. It has to heat up to a certain temperature before it works properly. And in the process, some of the ceramic bonding material has been outgassing, as it's called, and causing some small arcing aboard. This was expected. Now, I'm reporting that to you, but the bigger news is that everything is working beautifully on the ALSEP package. And according to Dr. Conway Snyder, one of the co-investigators on a solar wind experiment there, the whole package is going to increase scientific knowledge about the moon. And he said, I'm going to stick my neck out. I'm going to say a thousandfold, possibly even a millionfold. And Dr. Maurice Ewing, the venerable and honorable geologist from the Lamont Geological Observatory, nodded his head in agreement. And some of the most respected scientists in the nation certainly seem to nod their heads in agreement with the immense contribution to science that this package will make, and as will the geological investigations, the more extensive investigations that the astronauts were able to conduct on this mission as compared with Apollo 11.
Well, Rhett, weren't the scientists somewhat startled, and very pleasantly so, by the results of the seismic experiment, that is, when they crashed the lunar module into the surface of the moon?
That, of course, was in the purview of Dr. Ewing and Dr. Gary Latham of Maryland University and Dr. Frank Press of MIT. Well, they're ecstatic. The passive seismometer is the most important and the priority scientific package on the surface of the moon. When the Intrepid was crashed back on the surface some 49 kilometers or so away, it created a seismic rumble that lasted for about 55 minutes. It had a slow duration in building up, which was very revealing to scientists, and it had a long decay in dissipating. This seems to indicate that the surface of the moon is very unusual, unlike anything we know on Earth, and the scientists are extremely excited over this fact, and this particular seismic event, a known impact load going onto the surface of the moon, the ascent stage of the lunar module, and then this unusual seismic rumble that it created. And they're going to be working on that for many, many months to come. It's as though the moon is made of jelly or something that wobbled significantly when it struck with a hard blow like the ascent stage did. May I comment on one other thing? The personal side, demeanor and the character of my three friends, Conrad, Gordon, and Bean.
I thought you'd want to. They were certainly an exuberant group of astronauts, weren't they?
We have noticed from some correspondence that they raised the question of whether the astronauts were just a little too happy on the surface of the moon, whether Pete and Al particularly were a little too exuberant. These two men happened to be that way. They happened to be extremely exuberant and outgoing people. And I mentioned to Deke Slayton our gratitude for them allowing the astronauts to go their own way and to communicate so much to us and to continue talking to us. And he says they were on their own. Nobody told them what to do or anything. They strictly did it their way. There was no such thing as oxygen, an O2 high, as it's called, or getting excessively exuberant due to too much oxygen. That certainly was shot down. There's no such thing as that. The mission went so perfectly that Pete, when he climbed out down the ladder on the lunar module and looked out there about 200 meters away, and there sat the Surveyor spacecraft. He had landed exactly where he meant to land. There was the Surveyor right where it was supposed to be. Then their exuberance was just too much to take. They felt that way during the whole lunar stay, and certainly displayed that to us.
Well, now let's call in our colleague Norm Guerin, who's been with us these 10 long days. Norm?
Bill McCrory, I think I'll remember the lighthearted attitude that prevailed during the entire mission, but especially during the final 2 or 3 minutes before lunar touchdown. The boys were still quite excited at that time. I was going to ask Bill Land about some of the experiments regarding the seismic experiments. Is it true that they're going to try perhaps something with mortars on the next flight or in the future?
It won't be on the next flight, Norm, but on Apollo 14, we will have what we call an active seismometer. In fact, I was going to mention just a few minutes ago when Rhett was talking about the seismic experiment and how well it performed and how ecstatic the scientists are over it, that what we accomplished on this mission was turning a passive seismometer into an active seismic experiment. That is, we put something, we impacted the LEM, the ascent stage of the LEM, on the surface and created our own shock waves. Shock waves from, we knew where they emanated from, that is, we knew where the impact occurred, and we know the velocity and the mass of the craft, such that we're able to tell just what energy was imparted at that point, and now look back at the data from the seismometer and calculate some of the conditions that prevail in that area of the moon. That is, layer thicknesses and structure and that sort of thing. But on future missions, we will have a seismometer that is independent of the use of crashing another vehicle, as we did on this mission. And they will fire mortars, much like grenades, that will impact the surface and create an explosion and a certain amount of energy dissipation so that we can measure the effects.
Well, John Hammersmith, in 30 seconds, when will we see these space stations that we hear so much about in the future?
Well, we'd like to get space station up toward the latter part of the 1970 decade, Bill, but that's still a matter of getting approval and so on.
Well, astronauts Charles Pete Conrad, Richard Gordon, and Alan Bean are safely aboard the USS Hornet after a successful landing and recovery in the mid-Pacific Ocean, ending the 10-day moon mission for Apollo 12. And so the Voice of America comes to the end of its continuing coverage of man's second landing on the moon, a flight that marked the real beginning of man's exploration of the lunar surface. All of the difficult and sometimes hazardous goals of this lunar flight were accomplished. A pinpoint landing on the moon, the setting up of a nuclear-powered observatory with highly sophisticated experiments, 2 moonwalks that totaled 8 hours, proving that man can function without problems on the lunar surface, exploration in the landing site area, and the walk down the crater's edge to the landing site of Surveyor 3, bringing back parts of the unmanned spacecraft. And, of course, the very extensive gathering of lunar rocks and soils to bring back to Earth. Added to this, the careful photographic record of every phase of the flight, particularly the photographing of future landing sites on the moon. And thus, we will move on to Apollo 13, an even more complicated task in exploring the moon. Now, let me thank my many VOA and NASA colleagues who made our broadcast possible, correspondents Rhett Turner and James Miller at Cape Kennedy and the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston. Here in Washington, my co-host Norman Guerin and 4 NASA experts, William Land, John Hammersmith, Donald Beatty, and Merrill Waugh. Our thanks, too, to our many VOA staffers who made the broadcast possible. This is William McCrory in Washington. This program has come to you from the United States of America.